A show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past. A show that looks at Kansas City baseball's present.
Gordon dives, and yes, he made that catch. A tremendous catch that robbed Chicago of two runs by the Gold Glover Alex Gordon.
And a show that looks at Kansas City baseball's future. This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Welcome into a special edition of the Kansas City Baseball Vault. We had a chance to get on the phone. I should say I had a chance. We're still working out the details of like those guys over at the Pine Tar Press podcast who have Skype mastered. We're still working on mastering Skype on our end. And so we're going to do a real quick wraparound on these two interviews that I'm going to play. So let me set them up for you, and then you'll hear the interviews, and then we'll come back, and the guys and I will talk about it. And we'll go from there. It's actually just going to be Mike and I on this. Jeff, of course, part of the show. He didn't have a chance to listen to the interviews because he was pretty busy this week. They're trying to sell their house. So first off, here's the interview with Ryan Verdugo.
Welcome into the Kansas City Baseball Vault. I am Troy Olson, and I'm joined on the phone by Ryan Verdugo, who is Teach Me to Doogie, that's D-U-G-I, on Twitter. And he is also a starting/reliever pitcher for the Kansas City Royals, ending the season in Omaha, but did spend a little bit of time in the major leagues. For people that don't know, if they don't know much about you or they're new to our show, Ryan joined us right after he joined the team last year. He was brought over in the Milky Cabrera trade that involved him and another pitcher that we won't name because it just makes most Royals fans quite angry. He's kind of like a you have the bad guy that can't be named. That's the way John Sanchez is for most of the Royals fans at this point. He's the guy that nobody wants to name. So, first off, Brian, how you doing? How's it been?
I'm doing good. Now, I'm off season down here in Baton Rouge right now.
Ryan went to LSU. He's a big LSU fan, and he's definitely fun to follow during big LSU games like the national championship last year. Let's take a walk through this last year, because it's been about a calendar year since we talked to you the last time. Last November, I believe it was, you came over with Jonathan Sanchez from Milky Cabrera, which at the time everybody thought was a great deal. Sanchez had a ton of upside. There were good scouting reports on you. Milky Cabrera was a one-hit wonder. Of course, we all know as history played out, Milky went on for a half season to have great chat with San Francisco, and Sanchez ended up being a total flop in Kansas City. You were able to play very, very well in AAA before finally getting a chance to come to the major league. You were brought up. Your sister came to town. You had some friends and family, and then they didn't bring you into the game. I was actually at that game. We saw you warming up in the bullpen and got real excited because you'd been on the show and a friend of the program, and then you never got into that game. You went back down to Omaha. And then finally you came back up a day after Jonathan Sanchez had one of his worst starts of the year. And, of course, things don't go quite as well as planned for you that game. You pitched an inning in a third, I believe, giving up something like five or six runs. And kind of take us through what's that?
I said, yeah, it wasn't the best.
No. Probably one you'd like to just take away and pretend that one never happened, right?
Yeah. When you think about your debut, that's not exactly how you really want to draw that one up, but you know what happens.
So kind of take us through that couple of weeks. You get the call. First you're having this great year in Omaha. And I know when the Royals traded for you, I had to talk with it, you'd be a reliever. All of a sudden you're starting in Omaha. Everybody knows that the Royals can't keep starting pitchers worth a snot all season long. So there's a chance you're going to come up and start. Then you get the call, and you're brought up as a reliever for one day, I believe is all you were up here. When they brought you up, did they tell you anything? Did they kind of let you know that you may not play, or what was the plan for you when they brought you up the first time?
Well, I think around that time, it was, some of the starters up there were struggling, and they weren't, going very deep in the game, so they needed an extra kind of long guy up there. And so when I first got there, they told me
that, you know, I might only be up here for a couple of days and whatnot. And so I kind of expected, I think I was up there for 2 days and I got some back down. So I was kind of expecting it. I mean, you obviously want to get up there and get in and, you know, pitch well and prove that you belong and, you know, that you, you know, are valuable to be up there. But, I mean, it's still a good experience to be able to go up there. I mean, it's been, you know, my dream as a little kid to make it up there, and I finally did that. And it's pretty cool, though.
So you come up, you go back down, and then you get the call up, and you're going to start. And you come up, and you go through the preparation. Kind of take us through what it's like in your mind the night before when you're prepping for that start the next day.
Well, I found out the night before that I was getting called up. I was actually in the bullpen in Omaha at that point. I was, so I had a few innings out of the bullpen this year. And I walked into the locker room after the game, and Jersh called me into his office and said, hey, you know, you're starting tomorrow in the big league. So first I was like, oh, crap, you know, I got to go home and pack my wife so much stuff. And I had to make sure my, you know, nice clothes were clean and not, you know, folded in the corner somewhere. And then, the worst part of it, I actually got some sleep, but the hardest part was driving up there the next day because it's like a three-hour drive, and you're sitting there thinking for 3 hours. And, you know, some of those thoughts kind of run through your head like, you know, can I really do this? But you got to kind of flush those out. And as soon as I got to the field and started getting settled in, I got in my routine, and, you know, all those kind of butterflies really went out the window until about first pitch.
And so you get up here and you get into the stadium, and like I said, you were part of a trade that at the time was looking really bad for the Royals. And so I know myself and I kept saying to people, you know, this trade looks real bad right now, but Miki Guerrero was a one season wonder. You know, we'll see what happens with him. But you know, Sanchez hasn't been good, but let's see what we get from Ryan Verdugo, because he's part of this trade too. Let's see. And then that night comes and it doesn't work out. And unfortunately, the fans at that point were pretty hostile with the Royals in general. And unfortunately, a lot of that got directed at you and even flowed over into Twitter and kind of went after your sister a little bit, which is really unfortunate because she's super sweet and probably didn't deserve any of that, you know. From your opinion, like, what was that like? Like, I mean, just that whole... After the inning went so bad and the start goes awful, you know, what goes through your head, I mean, while you're standing out there and people are just unloading, you know, their fury in your general direction? I mean, do you think about that at all?
I mean, I heard it, but I mean, I wasn't really that upset about it. I mean, I probably would have booed me too, to be honest with you. But, but it was just one of those things, like, I'm harder on myself than any one of the fans probably could ever be. So I was just more disappointed, more embarrassed with, you know, what happened up there, because I know I could pitch better than that. And, you know, I only got one shot this year. So, it's, you know, so it's almost a motivation thing this whole offseason that I can use that to, you know, hopefully I'll get another shot this year and I can prove, you know, that I'm better than whatever my ERA up there was, a 34 or something like that.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. I mean, you can't really take one inning as a piece of work.
Yeah, but, you know, I have no hard feelings for getting booed or anything like that. It's just one of those things, if you don't have tough skin, you can't take someone booing you, and you're going to have a long career, and baseball's probably not the best thing if you can't handle a little criticism. So
you go back down, and let's go by, and they don't bring you back up for whatever reasons, and then October comes, or September comes, and I know I, for one, was kind of expecting to see you come back up, and you're on the 40-man. You'd already been up once this year, and then you don't get the call. Can you talk about that at all? Like, did they give you any reason for that or anything you can share on that?
You know, they didn't really give a reason, but it's just kind of one of those things where I thought I had a pretty good shot to get called up, but it's one of those, like I said, it's just kind of one of those things that's out of your hand. You can't really worry about what they're going to do or the moves they're going to make. I mean, it was awesome for the guys like Jake. I was good friends with Jake. I hung out with him in Omaha, so it was really cool to see him get called up, and I was happy for him, but they didn't really tell me much, so I mean, there's really not much I can say about that, and, you know, it's one of those things where I got to keep working, and everything happens for a reason, so hopefully next year I'll get up there and stay up there for longer than a couple of days at a time.
And you mentioned Jake, just for in case people don't know, that he's referring to Jake Odorizzi, of course, who came up, and he was part of the Greinke deal, so people were real excited to see him as well. Another big Royals trade piece that we were hoping was going to be a bigger part of this last season, a season that came up short of where the fans' expectations definitely were. And like you said, well, you know, hopefully next year we get to see people like you and Jake and a lot more, and hopefully that leads to something much, much bigger than what we've seen this year with the Royals. So now you're back in Louisiana, and it wasn't just you that didn't get the call. There were other guys on the 40-man that didn't get the call, like Clint Robinson, for example. He had come up and finally gotten a chance to play in the big leagues. Also didn't have a very good showing. The worry, I guess, for me as a fan of yours, is that we see guys like you and Clint not get the call up, and we know as fans that look into this stuff, we know that the Royals have a lot of guys that have to be on the 40-man. For the first season in my memory, the first time that I can ever remember is that the Royals have more than 40 guys that deserve to be on the 40-man. Is there any point in your mind where you go, there's a chance that either you're going to be moved off of the 40-man and or traded? Does that kind of stuff go through your mind, or do you just live and work and wait to see what happens?
I mean, it's in the back of your head a little bit, but like I said, you can't really let that stuff bother you. It's out of your hands. They're going to make moves what they feel. It's a business for them. I mean, they're trying to put the best possible team out there, and if, you know, that includes me, then, you know, that's great. And if not, I mean, I'm still going to keep working and trying to get up there. So, I mean, if anything happens, it's kind of one of the things you have to take with a grain of salt and just keep working. You got to understand it's a business and whatnot, and you can't let that stuff get to you. You still got to go out there and produce and give them a reason, you know, not to have you up there.
So let's get off of baseball for a little bit. Of course, that's what this show is about, but this show is also a little bit about nonsense. So now the offseason begins, and you get to enjoy some LSU football and Louisiana in general. So what does your offseason look like? I mean, Louisiana's got a lot going on. You know, there's Mardi Gras, and there's Bourbon Street and all that kind of stuff. What does an offseason look like for you?
Well, right now is my favorite part of the whole offseason. That's obviously college football. So down here is nothing like I've ever seen before. I haven't traveled to many of the road games, but I know growing up being on the Seattle area, there was not as much, you know, focus on college football as there is down here. Down here, everything shuts down on Saturdays except for restaurants and, you know, various bars and whatnot. But everyone's out the game. Everyone's tailgating. Everyone's having a good time. You know, the food's unbelievable down here. So there's not too much you can complain about.
Now, when the season started, you started out in Omaha, and you got rid of Twitter for a while. And that's, of course, how we had found you last year was we got a hold of you on Twitter, and you graciously agreed to come on to the Royal Man Report back then and did that. And we had a good conversation with you, which people can go look up. In fact, if you search Ryan Verdugo on Google, the fourth or fifth result is your interview on Kings of Kaufman or the Royal Man Report. So, it always makes me laugh because I think, and I wonder how long in your career that can stay up towards the top of the results so that when people search for you, they find that interview of all things. But you had come on and you talked about, you know, having Twitter and how much fun you have interacting with people. And you left for a while, which people found out through mostly through your sister, which at the time I didn't follow. She started following me later on, and I followed her back and was able to keep up with some of the goings-on with you while you were in Omaha getting your mind right and really producing some good baseball in Omaha. And finally you come back to Twitter. When did you decide or what made you decide to come back to Twitter?
I just kind of wanted to take a little time away from it and, you know, focus. You know, it was my first spring training going in with the Royals, so kind of just wanted to keep a low kind of profile and just go in there and work and not give anyone else a reason or not that I usually try to censor what I say to somewhat, but, you know, not draw more attention to myself in a negative way than I needed to. And I felt, you know, once I got out of spring training, got the season going a little more under my belt, then I could get back on there and start interacting a little bit more again.
Now, one thing that with you and a couple of the other players that were able to follow through Twitter, one, for example, is Jason Adam, who is a great friend of the program. You guys have family on Twitter as well, and for example, for you, your sister Emma is on Twitter, and she's very active, and especially during the season, she's very active talking baseball and what have you, and she's very knowledgeable about sports. And sometimes she gives you a little bit of crap like we had originally set up an interview with you earlier this year, and she said that we weren't allowed to say anything embarrassing about her this time because last time you gave up that she believes in unicorns. And so
very happy about that. Well, my parents heard it too, and they were of course, my parents were laughing at her. And then I think they told her she was listening and whatnot, and yeah, she wasn't very happy with me, but it was all in good fun. She can take it.
Evergugo76 is Ryan's sister, Emma, and like I said, she's very active on Twitter as well. She lives out in California now, correct?
Yeah, she does stuff with movies and sets and stuff like that, so she's out there working on a movie. I'm a bad brother, and I don't really know what movie it is, so she's probably getting mad at me for that, but she's out there doing that whole kind of thing.
Mostly, I just wanted to joke about that a little bit because I thought that was funny.
Yeah.
She took the time to mention that.
I told her that Omaha Zoo had the only unicorn in captivity that they've ever caught. She wasn't very fond that I told people that, especially when she was about, I think she was 18 or 19 when she made that comment, so figured she'd have a little bit more savvy than that by age 18 or 19, but she'll learn.
Well, you know, there's always things that people say that they kind of regret after the fact. You know, my girlfriend and I were joking, this is totally unrelated, but just kind of things that, that people, I'm sure, just slap their head and go, I can't believe I said that. But there was a woman that said that she thought deer could read deer crossing signs and those should be moved away from the highways so that, because she had hit like 3 deer out in North Dakota and she had said this on a radio show. And so she got harassed about it and it's on YouTube. So there's much worse things out there than believing unicorns are real, I do believe. So,
it's all in good fun. Me and her are pretty close, and we joke and go back and forth to each other a lot.
Well, that really kind of covers what I wanted to get you on the phone for. We had been wanting to talk to you for a while, especially since you had come back up. And I'm glad that you are as thick-skinned as you are and that you took the whole thing better than I did, because I was pretty irate with our fan base that they had booed a rookie. And, you know, it's one thing to boo somebody like Jonathan Sanchez who had been there for years and had seemingly given up on the team, but somebody that was just trying to find their way and in their first start to get booed like that, I didn't take it too well. And so I'm glad that you did, because that shows that you've got a good long career ahead of you as far as the mental state of the game goes.
Yeah, like I said, if you can't handle a little criticism in baseball, probably not the thing for you, then you probably should not do it, because it's going to be rough if you can't take a little criticism or, you know, a little booing.
I guess the one thing I didn't ask you, and I don't know if you even had a chance to do it because you were up here so short both times, but did you get a chance to enjoy any Kansas City barbecue?
I didn't. I should have, but I've heard a lot of good things. I don't know. I've seen some guys tweet about, you know, where should I go for the best barbecue and whatnot, and I'm not sure which is the best, because like I said, I was only up there for a couple of days. I didn't really get a chance to go out and explore too much, but hopefully next time I'm up there, I'm up there for a little bit longer, and I can go out and get into that, because I wouldn't mind some good barbecue.
Well, I'll tell you this, we'd love to, us guys from the Kansas City Baseball Ball would love to take you out for some barbecue. I know, I think all of us are, I can't speak for the other guys because they're not here, but I know, I think all of us are Oklahoma Joe's guys, which is on the Kansas side. So Kansas, Missouri, I don't know how much you know about the rivalry, but everything's a rival between Kansas and Missouri, between the two states. Yeah. So some people believe that the barbecue that's on the Missouri side is better with Gates or Arthur Bryant, and then there's people that believe that Oklahoma Joe's is the best, which is on the Kansas side. So we'll definitely help you make the rounds and get you some barbecue the next time you're up here. So, thank you for taking time and keep trucking on Twitter. We hope that you're able to work it into your spring training this year and let us know what's going on with you, because I know a lot of us fans really do enjoy interacting with the players, and hopefully you break camp with the team in spring training and get to spend some time up in Kansas City and have lots of barbecue and have a fruitful career up here. I'm hoping, I know like you, we'll be watching real closely here on our program to see what happens with the 40-man stuff and if you're still part of our team come after that decision. But until then, I guess we'll let you enjoy some LSU football and follow you on Twitter
at Teach Me to Dougie. That's D-U-G-I. And thank you so much for taking the time to come on with us today.
And that was me sitting down with Ryan Verdugo, or as you can probably tell by sometimes I'm a little winded, I don't sit down when I talk on the phone. I have to walk around. So, it's my ADHD, man. Blame it on the ADD. Anyways, so Ryan Verdugo's a really neat guy. He's been on the show a couple of times. We had a lot of fun with him. Tried to give Emma Verdugo a little bit of a hard time. I did incorrectly give out his Twitter handle during the interview. It's Teach Me to Dougie 11. I thought he had gotten rid of the 11 when he came back, but it's Teach Me to Dougie, D-U-G-I 11. Definitely follow him on Twitter. Great guy. But like D.B. Leske said on our roundtable show, he may not be with this team next year, and we kind of talked about that. Mike, what did you take away from the interview with Verdugo?
You know, I thought that was the main thing that really kind of stood out was just, you know, his frankness about that situation, that he knows that this is a business, that, you know, his spot is not guaranteed. And, you know, even following him on Twitter, I think he said something at some point. I don't remember who he was talking to, but he said something in reference to his start last year. And he was like, well, if you go looking for my ERA, it's like 500 or something. So, well, you know, definitely understands that, you know, he wasn't that great. But that was the thing that I took, was that he's just understanding that it's a tough business and it's a tough roster to make. You know, and even with guys like Clint Robinson that you guys talked about a little bit and whatnot, about, you know, the possibility that some guys are just going to have to be left off.
And, you know, and I really did enjoy his frankness. And he's always been that way, even on Twitter. I mean, I can't share some of what we talked about off the air, but, you know, we even talked a little more about that and some things that have happened to do with his Twitter. But, you know, he did leave for a while to be more focused. And he came back, and he did have that bad start. And that, you know, that sucks for him because he is a very nice guy. And, you know, like it's the story of the Royals, nice guys, you know, that don't pan out. But hopefully he'll be the exception. And I appreciate what he said about the fans, because honestly, he took it better than I did. I mean, I was hot about that situation. And, I mean, he even kind of scolded his sister. He's like, yeah, she'd had a couple of drinks anyways, and, you know, whatever. So.
Yeah. What are you going to do?
He wasn't upset at all. I mean, he would have booed himself, he said. So I think if there's a guy that you want to get behind, you want to hope does better than what we first saw. And look at how bad Will Smith did, and the notoriously famous rant by me on the Kansas City Baseball Vault radio show, where I was not trying to say that he's going to be the next Nolan Ryan, but that's how all you clowns took it.
Oh, that's how Chris did. I know exactly what you're saying. I'm right with you on that.
Okay, well, good. I'm glad somebody is.
I understand what you're saying there. I just, you know, it's more fun to watch Chris pile on.
Yeah, this is true. So, but, you know, he's not going to be Nolan Ryan, but Will Smith had a good year. I mean, he may be a big part of this team next year, and hopefully Ryan Verdugo gets another shot. And, you know, there's something to be said for not getting called up on that 40-man, though. There is something there, and I didn't expect him to really tell us, but as a reporter, I asked the question, and I can only get the answers they're willing to give me, and I'm not going to try to trick him into an answer. That's not what we're about here at the Kansas City Baseball Vault. We'll never be like that. So, but I think that – did you have any other last thoughts on that interview, Mike?
No.
Okay.
It's pretty cut and dry.
If you haven't heard the original one, go check it out. It's really funny. A lot of Harry Potter talk. We didn't have as much cleverness in this one. I think we had pretty well covered that, but I wanted to get down and dirty with the baseball.
The Kansas City Baseball Vault will be right back after these messages.
Brand new Royal Stadium in Kansas City's Harry S. Truman Sports Complex is the attractive setting for this year's game. Hosting this all-star occasion are Mr. and Mrs. Ewing Kauffman. And with a stadium record crowd of almost 41,000 streaming in, everything certainly is up to date in Kansas City.
The Vault.
Come to Spit Cup this week. We'll let the person who has the highest bar tab ride the bull. We don't have any TVs in our bar, but we make our own entertainment. Mondays, it's free cover charge to anybody with a gun rack in their pickup truck. Tuesdays, we've got $8 beer night. All domestic beers are on special for only $8. It's Spit Cup. Wednesdays is longest tobacco spit. Thursday is his foot fungus night. Friday night is jamboree night. Bring your crap kick in your 10-gallon hats. And this weekend, you get our world-famous Spit Cup girls. You get to pick which one has the most teeth. It's Spit Cup. No love letters, talking to the wall.
Or you could go to Kelly's Westport Inn. The highest quality drinks with the lowest prices. You know what we do. Drinks, friends, plenty of TV showing sports. They've got all the basketball and all the baseball on. Live music on the weekends. The best pizza in Kansas City and fun. Kelly's has the best rooftop patio in town and is voted one of the best places in Kansas City to check out the view, if you know what I mean, and maybe make a new friend. Make the best choice for your evening entertainment, Kelly's Westport Inn. Kelly's is at 500 Westport Road in Kansas City, Missouri. Kelly's Westport Inn. Tell them the Royal Man Report sent you.
Welcome into the Kansas City Baseball Vault. I'm Troy Olson, and I'm joined on the phone by friend of the program, the guy that's come on with us more than anybody else, and we just keep getting him back because we like talking to him, Jason Adam, now just the Royals minor league system, because we don't know where you'll be the next time we see you suit up, but Wilmington Blue Rocks is where you finished your year last year. How was the year down in Wilmington?
It was an amazing year. Wilmington was an awesome town, awesome fans, the stadium, and everybody treated us great. Obviously, my goal was to move on to the next level during the year, but I felt like my year was fairly successful despite not reaching that goal. And, I wasn't sure what to expect when they sent me to Delaware as far as what it'd be like out there, but it was an awesome experience.
I have a friend that lives up in that area, and she sent me a Blue Rock shirt, and I think it got more work than any of my Royal shirts sort of came to last year, mostly just because it was fun to see which people actually knew what the Blue Rocks were. So it was a good year for you in Wilmington, which we were, of course, here at the Kansas City Baseball Vault / Royal Man Report. We're really glad to see you guys have a great year there, and Wilmington as a whole have a decent year. If you look at your win-loss record, it's not so hot because you didn't get a lot of help from your teammates at some of your starts, but the pitching stats that you did control were all pretty good. When we talked to Bill Fisher on the radio version of the KC Baseball Vault, we actually brought you up at one point and said, you know, what do you see the progression of a guy like Jason Adam? How do you see him making it to the major league? And they talked about that they prefer for the pitching staff, they prefer to take everybody kind of slow, and kind of like what you were saying, you wanted to get out of Wilmington, but you never got to Northwest Arkansas. And what we got from Bill was, and there lies the problem with phone and phone interviews, is because sometimes you just lose somebody on the other end. So we're back, and we were talking with Jason Adam, of minor league Royals pitcher, hometown boy, I didn't mention that for people that don't know, from the Kansas side of the Kansas City area. You went to school at Blue Valley, right?
Blue Valley Northwest, yeah.
Yeah. So went to school here locally, got drafted by his hometown team. One thing we've talked about with him in the past, and you can go check out plenty of those interviews at kingsofkauffman.com/podcast or royalmanreport.com. It's the same place. But we've talked a lot about what it's like being a fan and being a player. So check those out as well. We're going to continue talking with Jason about his career specifically. You had mentioned before we got disconnected, that you were hoping to maybe get the bump up at one point and into Northwest Arkansas. And we had talked to Bill Fisher on the radio version of the podcast, and he had mentioned that the Royals take kind of a slow approach with their pitchers and that it could be a year at each level for you. Do you ever find that there's a time when you're impatient and would have liked to move on from Wilmington, or did you feel that your training was going in a direction that it should have, and you were happy to wait it out?
The competitive side of me always wanted to make that jump and prove
prove to everybody that I could pitch at the next level. But at the same time, Luber, our pitching coach at Wilmington, he was a great help all year, and I kept learning new things every game, basically, with him. So I don't think it necessarily, it in no way did it slow down my progress. It's just competitively I wanted to move on and get one step closer to the big leagues.
Now, you were able to come home to Kansas for a little while and enjoy everything of being home and have some time with family and what have you. Now you're back in Arizona, right?
Yes, I'm out of my Arizona just working out and relaxing.
So I guess that answers the next question of how your offseason goes. You know, last year you told us you were working out a lot and going through the motions and trying to get yourself as prepared as you could for spring training so that, like we talked about, you could have the best foot forward in your progression. What's the normal offseason look like for Jason Adam? Like, what do you do in the offseason?
Like right now, I'm working out Monday through Friday. I lift every day and do either like a sprinting, like shuttle type run or a 20-minute jog. And then Saturday and Sunday are off. If I can find somebody or someone invites me, I'll go hike. I can hike Camelbacks on like a Saturday or Sunday just for something a little extra to get out of the house. But that's my life pretty much, just working out for like 4 hours a day and finding stuff to do to fill the rest of the time.
Do you watch much college football this time of year?
I honestly don't. I mean, I'm a Mizzou fan, but at the I don't even know who they last played or anything. I know they're not doing good at all this year, so it makes it me especially not watch too much.
Now, I got to ask you, because I grew up in central Nebraska, and so I grew up a Royals fan and what have you, but I didn't grow up necessarily a fan of any of the college teams around here, and you're from Kansas. You're from the Kansas side, but yet you're a Mizzou fan, and a lot of people around here think that that's kind of sacrilege. How did that happen in your life? Is it because, you know, they were interested in you as a player, or were you always a Mizzou fan?
I wasn't necessarily always a Mizzou fan. But I was never a KU fan. I think my sister's the same way. I don't know if it's just we got sick of all the KU fans, I think. No offense to any KU fans, but we were just like, we had 30 minutes from our house, and everybody loved them, and they were just like, all right, enough KU. And my sister ended up going to Mizzou, and when I went and would visit her and watch her soccer games there, I loved the place, and I loved the people that I met. So it's like, all right, I guess I like Mizzou.
You know, I got to say, that's hilarious, because I wish that we could have done this on a live interview, because, you know, the other two guys that I do the show with, Jeff and Mike, are both big KU guys, so I'm sure that they would just be oohing and aahing with your last statement there. But I can figure pain, because when I worked at a restaurant on 119th Street, it was all KU fans, and I got kind of worn out on that. And people on Twitter seem to think I'm a KU homer sometimes because I have a man crush on Bill Self. But, I mean, one of the greatest basketball coaches of all time, so how can you not? And I've met him in person. He was a great man. But that's another story for a different time. But it's just interesting that, because since I've come out here the last 4 or 5 years and really lived out here and met so many people through Twitter, and people have such that strong hatred one side or another, it was interesting that you growing up on the Kansas side had kind of went for Mizzou. Now, why not K-State? Were they just never in the picture in your life?
No, I mean, when I was younger, I was a big K-State fan. I guess that, when I was young, I was a Fairweather fan for sure. And so I loved, like, K-State. I loved when, like, the first time, I guess, when Bill Snyder was there. They were good, and I guess I was maybe, like, fifth grade. And then after that, I kind of got away from just watching sports because I was so consumed with playing them all the time. And then once I started visiting my sister at Mizzou, I just switched it up.
Nice. So, yeah. K-State, of course, this year are having somewhat of a special season. We'll see how that goes for them. It could be something that they've never done before, something that
the Mizzou folks were hoping would happen this year, that they would have kind of a nice run like that and rip through the SEC and you know, take out South Carolina at home and or take out South Carolina there and take out Georgia at home. Unfortunately, that didn't happen for them. But getting back to baseball, so you're working out now. What do they put you on, a program in the off season, or do you just kind of have your own thing?
They give everybody a generic program, but since I live out in Arizona and I work out at the spring training facility, Garrett, the minor league strength and conditioning coordinator, he kind of makes the plan specific to me, and I work out with him and a few other guys, so we can mix it up and make it more fun. But when the more fun we make it, usually it's a little bit harder. But it's better, I think, and it keeps me focused because there's no distractions for me out here. All my friends are in Kansas or Missouri or even Delaware now. So it's out here, I'm strictly focused on getting prepared for next season.
So I guess that kind of brings me to my next point. Is there very many of you down there? Like how many people are down in Arizona at any given time?
On average, in the off season, there's probably eight of us working out at the field, that don't have to be here. Last year, it was me. Montgomery was out here a lot of the time. Lamb was out here, and then Bruce Chen, Billy Butler, they were out here all off season. Dorio was out here, which is really cool having those three guys because. I mean, they're all guys that I watched before I was even drafted. So I went to games and watched them. So they're great mentors, and we get competitive in the weight room and stuff. There's usually 8 to 10 just working out every day.
So do they put you up in a place down there, or do you kind of have an apartment that you keep in Arizona as well?
Well, last year they put me up in. Back and forth between a hotel and a condo, and then this year I actually bought my own house out here. So I love being out here so much, and it could possibly be a money-making thing in the future as far as I could rent it out, and even if the housing market does grow, I could eventually sell it.
Nice. That's very smart. It's good to see that a man that just turned 21 and has this huge career potentially ahead of you is still thinking about the what ifs if things don't pan out, that you could have another option there. That's very cool to hear from somebody that is starting out in baseball the way you are. So you kind of brought up that you were mentored by guys you watched before you were drafted. Like we talked about, you're a fan of the Royals on top of being a player for the team. Do you ever find yourself kind of giddy around some of the major leaguers that you've met? Is there anybody that you've met that has just kind of blown your mind that you're actually standing next to that person or working with that person?
I don't know how to describe the feeling, but it's I get nervous with the first few times. Now I'm comfortable with those guys, but the first time I meet them, they're like, hey, I get a nervous. I don't even know. I'm shy. I get shy. And try to, look, because I look up to them still so much that, I want to respect them, because they're definitely superior to me. I mean, they're in the big leagues and have been for several years. So I guess that's what I could describe it.
Have you had an opportunity, I assume you have, because I think he comes down there and works in the spring training, but have you had an opportunity to, meet and talk to George Brett? Because I can't imagine there was a player other than, Brett and White that you grew up just really idolizing more than those guys, because they're the biggest Royals names that have ever come through. Have you had a chance to talk to them, and what was meeting them like for you?
I met George Brett. The first time I ever, one-on-one talked to him was last spring training. I was just walking up to the field to watch a game, and he happened to be walking next to me, and he started talking, and I was I kept talking, and then, after I walked away from him, I was like, whoa, that was George Brett. It was it was crazy feeling. And then I never actually met Frank White, but one of my friends, someone was talking to Frank White, and they brought my name up, and they said, like, oh, yeah, the kid from, like, Blue Belt Northwest or whatever, and, like, he knew about me. And when they told me that, I was like, that's kind of cool. Like, Frank White knows who I am. Like, I watched him. Like, I didn't get to watch him play when I was younger, but I know all about, like, his 8 gold gloves and watched him broadcast with the Royals. So
Go ahead, sorry.
Oh, sorry. I was just saying it's just something I don't know if I'd ever get used to.
I'll say this about Frank White. I have had an opportunity to talk to and deal with Frank White on several occasions, and just being a normal fan and having met him through different ways, he's a phenomenal human being, like, but he really does know the game, and partly because he worked for the Royals, and partly because he's still a fan of the game and of the team, even through everything that's gone on. But yeah, I'm sure he knew who you were because he knows the hometown kid because he was one, and he knows, you know, how he knows the team and the organization very, very well. So that doesn't completely surprise me, but I hope that at some point you do get a chance to meet Frank White, because I think he's somebody that everybody should meet once, because my dealings with him have all been extremely positive. Let me see. So this offseason you're just going to work, and then you'll report. So you can be down in Arizona as much as you want or as little, I take it, going back to the conversation about being down there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm out here by choice. They don't require me to be there. I guess they don't have any requirements, but I go every day because I'm out here. What else would I be doing with my time? And I guess I take time off for Thanksgiving and Christmas, but other than that, I go every day.
Now, has the team ever said anything to you about that? Like, did you get a lot of really positive feedback about being that dedicated, that you're there all the time, especially now that you're there for the second straight year like that?
Oh yeah, I think they definitely appreciate it, and it just makes it easy for them to know that I am actually doing my workouts, and they know I'm not going home. Like, if I got injured, like in a weird way working out, they would be able to immediately treat me right here on site. Like, when they have money invested, I think they appreciate being able to watch the players, like, under their own supervision, I guess.
Well, we're definitely going to be keeping an eye on you. Now, you're kind of a fan, too, and one thing we were talking about on the last couple of shows is we're coming up on 40-man time, and it's a while away for you before you had to worry about being added to 40-man, but when you think about the fact of how bad, as a fan, how bad the Royals have been over the last 5 or 10 years, and then you can kind of look at the team this year, and even though they underperformed, and most of us expected a 500 season, didn't quite get there, they're coming into this offseason. There's actually talk that good players could be left off the 40-man, guys like Clint Robinson and some of the other guys that are currently on the 40-man may have to be removed to make space for some of you young guns that are coming up. As a fan, how does that make you feel about the organization? And then as a player, how does that feel that knowing that you're going to have to compete so hard over the next few years to find your way into that 40-man because it is so loaded with young talent?
Yeah, I mean, I love it as both a fan and as a player, because as a fan, obviously, if you're leaving good players, you have to having to leave good players off the 40-man. That means you're heading the right direction and getting more good players on the big league roster. And then as a player, it makes my job a little bit tougher, I suppose. But I forgot who told me this, but they're like, you're not going to make it to the big leagues because the people in front of you are bad. You're going to make it to the big leagues because you're better than the people in front of you. So, or not, I guess, the people that would then be behind you. So I don't have to change my approach about pitching or try to overdo anything. I just got to continue doing my program and, like, pitching my way, and then hopefully eventually that'll pan out so I reach my ceiling, and then hopefully my ceiling's like a great big league starter.
So let's take it both as a fan and a player here, staying kind of with that direction. Say that you come out and you're doing well, and which we
have no reason not to believe that you're going to do well, and you're doing well. And like we said, there's all these pieces on the 40-man that are really good, and the Royals are just chucking along either next year or the year after, and they're in the playoff hunt. And they make that trade to get one final player that they need to push into the playoffs and attempt a run at the World Series. And you're one of the guys that gets traded for the player that comes over and leads this team on a playoff run. How does that make you feel, like, as a fan and as a player, to know that now you may never get to play with your hometown team, but you were part of the reason that they were able to make a run indirectly because you were one of the pieces that somebody else wanted to bring that player to Kansas City?
Yeah, I mean that's tough because my dream's always been to play for the Royals, but I guess no matter where I'm playing, I'll always have that Royals fandom in me. But my ultimate goal is still to play for the big league team, and I'd rather help the team in a way where I'm actually pitching for them in the playoffs. But if my contribution to be made is that I get traded for a player that can help them contribute, I mean, honestly, I don't know how I'd feel. That'd be tough. That'd be really tough.
I know we've talked about in the past about, I know, in fact, I don't know what it's been now, probably a little over a year ago, that your name got batted around on Twitter, and it was probably an empty rumor, but you know how those things go. But you had been batted around on Twitter that you could be traded for a player, and we kind of touched on this back then. But as you continue to get better, those offers for Jason Adam are going to continue to come across Dayton Moore's desk, and it'll be interesting to see if your value as a trade commodity gets to be to a point where it's either, I guess you have to say where it's worth more for them to trade you than even to bring you up to the team. And it'll be interesting to see as your career goes on, because like you said, you know, you're not anywhere near your ceiling yet. And as you continue to achieve, it'll be interesting to see what the Royals do with you. But of course, I know all of us at this show would really hope that you're up here in Kansas City for a long, long time and able to take this team to very special places. So, on that, is there? I don't really have a lot today. I just wanted to touch base with you because you've been somebody that have been really good to us in the past. Over the last couple of years, we've been doing the show, and we've been able to follow your career through pretty much as long as you've been in the organization. We've been able to kind of keep tabs on you. I guess I forgot to say this. You can follow Jason on Twitter at Jason_Adam9. That's Adam with no S. I got one last one now that I think about it. I saw a tweet about the Cardinals this year. What's so special about their team is that they have so many homegrown players. Of course, the Royals are all in on the homegrown player right now. And if you look at the team, that's what it mostly is. I mean, depending on how you define people like Dick Odorizzi and Alcides Escobar, who came over for a homegrown player in Zach Greinke. Figuring that you make it to the major leagues and you make it with the Royals, to make it to the playoffs with not just with the team being your favorite team of the Royals, but to make it with a team with a bunch of guys that have came from the same place as you came from, you know, the same, they've taken the same road through Wilmington and Northwest Arkansas and Omaha and then finally in Kansas City. Does that change, like, I guess you probably haven't been I don't know if you've been in the major in baseball long enough to really comment on this, but would that change your opinion of how you guys would interact? Like, do you think that teams that are homegrown like that interact better, and it makes teams that may not have as much talent as a team that's built on all the ace free agents, do you think there can be something to be said for growing that talent within and then the chemistry that goes on making a team that may not have as much talent actually better than the more talented team because they've had these guys that have played together and came from the same place for so many years?
Yeah, I absolutely believe that. I mean, you can see it. Like, it takes, I think, everybody coming up through the same minor leagues kind of takes the egos out of play. As far as, I mean, obviously I don't know any of the Yankees players, but I would imagine there's some pretty big egos among them just based on their salaries and their, like, past achievements. But with teams like the Royals, even guys like Billy Butler, who had an awesome year, he has no ego. and they're all reaching for, like, we would all be reaching for the same goal as a team instead of reaching for personal achievement. And I can see that with the Cardinals. And I know Trevor Rosenthal, and we have the same agent, so I was talking to my agent about Trevor. He's having such great success this year, and he talks about how, like, Trevor's first day in the big leagues, like, that all the veteran guys who could have egos, they're pretty established veteran, do them so nice and weren't like the typical. The stories I've heard from some guys making their big league debuts were like the veterans will almost shun them till they earn the right to like talk type of thing. So I think with us, the Royals, with our guys making it through the same system and coming up together and winning together through the minor leagues, there's no egos to be found, and everybody's like, well, we've won in the minor leagues together. Why can't we win in the big leagues together?
Well, I think that's the eternal question here in Kansas City, and that's kind of started being asked already this year that, you know, the organization has made a real big push on. They've won at every level, therefore they're going to win in the big leagues, and didn't quite happen this year yet, and, of course, it's early in everybody's career that's gotten up here, but I know there's a lot of us, you know, social media reporters or bloggers, whatever you want to call us, that are out there that really hope that that's true, but I know there's a few, probably more than a few, that are that really want to see how that all plays together, that winning in the minors translates into winning in the majors, because we want a winner in Kansas City. I mean, I'm sure you feel the pain as much as anybody with watching the team struggle, and I don't know if you're a football fan at all, but of course the Chiefs aren't very good either. And I mean, you're 21 years old, so the Royals have never made the playoffs in your lifetime, and on top of that, the Chiefs have, you know, one competitive playoff season with Joe Montana in your lifetime. I think my math's right on that, you know, so yeah. I mean, I know you're like the rest of us, and you've gone through the pains with us, so I think it'll make it real special that if this team, say in 2 years, and you got a September call up to help push this team, or even maybe by then you've actually, you know, become a regular part of the Royals, be it starter, reliever, whatever, a couple years from now, and this team really makes that push into the playoffs, it would be something, I think, extremely special for all of us and all of you guys, the players that have come up that way. So I think it'd be real cool if we can do like the Cardinals did and get the pieces right and get the team right and produce a winner here in Kansas City.
Exactly. And I think the fans deserve it just seeing how loyal all the Royals fans have been. I know, like myself, like all the fans are getting a little bit impatient, which is understandable, but I really do think this program through the minor leagues, I think it'll pay off.
Now, let me ask you a question. Being a Kansas City fan, I'd love to get your opinion on this. Lately, we've been a little beat up in the national media. We got beat up about Boo Cano because we were supporting Billy Butler and holding Robinson Cano responsible for breaking his promise. And then we got beat up, somewhat rightly so, when some fans were cheering Tassel's injury, but more so cheering the fact that he was going to be removed from the game and somebody else, anybody else, was going to have a shot at quarterback in Kansas City. I don't know, you probably don't even have time because you're so busy, but do you ever read some of the stuff that's said about the Kansas City fan, and what's your reaction to some of that that's been out there about just the fan of Kansas City and how we're just an angry fan base that is out of hand at this point?
Yeah, I mean, I read more about the Boo Cano thing because that's closer to, like, my interest in baseball. And I think the reports on the Kansas City fans were biased against us. I don't think they got the full story out there about how he made the promise and stuff. So I guess from there, if you don't see that whole story, it made us look bad. But I think people know we're obviously a loyal to Kansas City fan base. I think once the winning starts, the consistent winning, I think people will really start to
appreciate how great our fan base is.
Yeah, and hopefully we never end up being a spoiled fan base to the way of the Yankees. That I don't know if you saw this or not, but apparently the Post, the New York Post, had on the cover it said, "Sorry, Yankees, we don't cheer for losers," or something like that. I hope that as Kansas City fans, we never lose our base. And even Boston has gotten this way. They've gotten a little entitled because they've been so good recently. But they had, you know, how many years of poor baseball. And so hopefully we were able to stay grounded as a fan base, and that this will just be a dark mark against, like you said, it's just loyalty gone a little too wild or gone the wrong direction just because we want so bad for a winner here in the city.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think the years of not being where we want it to be, I think, will help keep the fans humble, still be able to remember these past however many years when we do start becoming consistent. Yeah, past too many years, but they'll be able to remember that and then truly appreciate our years of consistent dominance.
Well, Jason, thank you as always for taking the time. It's always good to talk to you because you're one of us. You've come from the same neighborhoods as a lot of people that listen to this, and no matter what their college alignment might be, I think everybody can appreciate where you come from and what you're doing in the minor leagues. And it definitely makes it a little more fun when you're out of the K and they do the minor league report and they talk about how Jason Adam had a great start down in Wilmington. And me and like three other people cheer loudly because we know who you are, and everybody's kind of looking at us funny, and we're like, "Yeah, that's Jason Adam. He's from the area, and he's awesome." And I'm gonna go sit down there. But hopefully there will be a lot of reasons to cheer you at hopefully Northwest Arkansas or in Omaha this coming year and for the next couple of years, and then hopefully within a couple of years we get to see you up here in Kansas City and leading the Royals to the playoff run, you know, or maybe a second or third playoff run by that point. So that would that'd be pretty
absolutely
cool.
So later that day, the same day I talked to Ryan Verdugo, I had a chance to call up Jason Adam, who's been an absolutely amazing part of our show. He's from the Kansas City area, went to Blue Valley North, I believe.
Northwest.
And, Northwest. He's only told me this probably 8 times, and I still get it wrong. he's been on with us literally, what is it, Mike, 6-7 times now?
6 or 7, yeah.
Mike gives me a hard time. I even mentioned this in the interview that I call up Jason at least, you know, once a quarter probably. And
yeah,
just,
I'm always like, we can talk to other people. It's okay.
But, you know, it's real easy when you have somebody's number like that and you can just say, hey, you know, what's your opinion as a fan of what's going on in Kansas City? You know, just talk to us. And honestly, you know, it's like I said, if it was going to be a 5-minute interview, it was a 5-minute interview. But he's always worth talking to. He's a very, very nice guy. And I found, for me, the things that I took away from that was, as a fan, he gets it too. And he's really frustrated with this team. I thought his conversation about growing up in a KU family and then rooting for Mizzou was quite hilarious. So.
Yeah, that was something else. I guess I get it, but he also did admit that he's a fair weather fan.
Yeah, he did
sense.
Say that. So
I mean, he openly said it, and that's okay. The first step is admitting.
Right, and so he's a lot of fun in that way, but he's not, he's really no, he's a lot like you, Mike. He doesn't do anything but baseball. I mean, I took that away. He doesn't even care for college football or anything. It's all baseball for Jason. So,
yeah.
What did you primarily take away from that, Mike?
You know, the answer that he gave to the idea of if he were traded for somebody that got the Royals over the hump was almost exactly what you want to hear from a guy, and not in that like cliched way, you know the way he was talking about how he wanted to be the guy that got him over the hump and not be the guy who got them the guy. You know, that speaks to competitiveness, and I think that's good. You know, and he did have a really good year, and it is kind of weird that they didn't call him up to AA, but I don't think it's outrageous. But I think he also knows that's probably the next step, and that he's ready for that next step.
Did you almost take away some sadness in the thought of being traded away?
A little bit. You know, I think they always kind of have to know that at any moment, you know, they can be moved around for any time. I mean, it could happen over the next few months, just like that. Just one day they're there and no intention in moving them, and the next day, you know, the circumstance changes and somebody comes available, and that's the guy who needs to go. But, you know, I think you look at guys like you look at Brandon Crawford of the Giants. I mean, the really cool story came out yesterday when in 93, when the Giants were possibly going to be moving to St. Petersburg, they have this picture of Brandon Crawford, who grew up a Giants fan, and now he's their starting shortstop in the World Series. And it's that kind of thing with Jason Adam, who grew up 30 minutes from Royals / Kauffman Stadium, and you know, has been a fan all his life and is now playing for that hometown team. And I think, you know, there would be some sadness. I know that if I were a player and I were drafted by the Royals and they traded me, I would be disappointed, you know, because you want to, you know, it's one of those things that, like, Kevin Goldstein gets on people a lot for this, where you'll say, oh, we need a starter. Oh, we? I'm not part of the team. But as a fan, you make that connection. And, you know, you do feel it as a bigger part of more than just being some random team. You know, you follow these guys and you get attached to them and you get invested in how they do. And, you know, I think it's got to be the same as a player, especially in his situation where he's drafted by the team that he grew up watching.
Well, and we'll go ahead and we're going to wrap this up pretty quick here, but we, you know, we really do appreciate talking to Jason, and I will tell you this, you will hear more from him before it's all said and done. He's definitely going to be somebody that is going to be very involved with this show. One of the things he said to me off the air, and it really went to heart for me, he said he really likes doing interviews with us because we don't take ourselves too seriously. He goes, you're serious enough to get your point across, but you have a lot of fun doing it. And he goes, mass media isn't like that, is essentially what he said. And, you know, for me, that is right on the nose with what we have tried to accomplish with this show. We've tried to be legitimate enough to make people want to listen to us and enjoy what they hear, but still having enough fun that we're not the mass media. So I really like Jason, and he has he is going to try to do some stuff with us before the end of the year when he gets here to town. We don't want to give anything away on that, but he has agreed to do it. If time allows, nice. Over Thanksgiving or Christmas. Like he said, he lives in Arizona now, so he has kind of left us behind a little bit here in Kansas City. I shouldn't say that because I know he listens. He's still a Kansas City guy, but he's got a place in Arizona, and he has invited me down if I get down there for spring training, which I would say there's a 95% chance that I will be at spring training in mid to late March, and we'll be visiting with Jason then as well.
Me too, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
I know I'm going down there. I just don't know when.
Well, try to plan for the beginning of spring training if you can, because then we can have full coverage. But right. I will say this. If anybody's ever wanted to be part of the Kansas City Baseball Vault or the Royal Man Report, this is your chance. If you're down in spring training and you can get your hands on a recorder, because all you got to do is go up to the field. They'll talk to you.
Yeah.
If you want to be an on-the-site reporter, we'll put you, you know, you can come on the Google Talk with us, and we'll make you part of the show for a couple of weeks. If you want to go down there, just let us know, royalmanreport@gmail.com. Let us know. But let us know who else you want to hear from. We're always efforting. One question, or one person that I want the fans to tell me if you'd be interested to hear from this guy is, he had mentioned him in the interview, so I'm going to reach out to Jason and see if we can get him as well. But Trevor Rosenthal, who's actually a Cardinals pitcher, I'm going to effort to get him anyways, because if we're not going to have him on here, I'm going to try to do an interview with Bill Ivey and run it with one of Bill's shows over at I-70 Baseball. He's got a more national scope as well with some of his sites. Bill's got his hands in a lot of stuff, honestly. And so we appreciate, I guess, our cousin blogger, you'd say. He's not part of Fansided, so he's not one of our sister sites, but he's definitely part of the family. But let us know if you'd like to hear from Trevor Rosenthal, because I think that could be fun too. And I can reach out to Jason and at least get a hold of their agent and try to get it through that. We haven't had a lot of luck with agents. I know Mike got Lokane through an agent, but I couldn't get Jeff Francoeur through an agent. So that tells you, I guess, the difference in the agents. But do you have any closing thoughts on any of this, Mike?
No, I mean, I hope Jason Adam does well when he gets to Double A. I'm pretty sure that's where he's going to end up. It's good to hear that he's always working. And, you know, Verdugo, too, I hope he gets another shot because, you know, why not? I mean, he's an easy guy to root for. And, you know, if he pans out, then, hey, that's one less pitcher you have to wait to see if they pan out, right?
And even if he only ends up being a reliever and he's another Aaron Crow type, is that all that bad?
No, no. I mean, a good arm is a good arm, and you know, we'll take him.
So, Jeff, do you have any comments on Verdugo or Adam as a whole that you want to add?
I kind of echo Mike's sentiments as far as Verdugo. I mean, obviously he's been on the show a couple of times, so of course it's easy for us to root for. But I think even the general public, if you follow him on Twitter and stuff like that, you see he's an easy guy to root for. You want him to succeed. And like Mike said, anytime, you know, the more talent you can get in pitching up to this organization that's better than what we got, then let's get it up here, you know. And I mean, if you move Verdugo to the bullpen, I mean, our bullpen's pretty stacked, so, you know, that's a little bit tougher competition, but the sentiment remains the same. And Jason Adam, I mean, the guy has, he's gotten better each year. He continues to look more and more like a legitimate major league prospect, and hopefully he continues that trend up towards next year. And, I mean, if he, double A is really seems to be for Royals prospects and for a lot of prospects in general, but you notice a lot with the Royals just because yeah. Wilmington is such a pitcher's park, and the Texas League is such an offensive league that AA is kind of that make or break point. So if Jason Adam can come up next year and be in AA and have some success, then all of a sudden we can start talking about him projecting towards the major leagues legitimately. You know, now he seems to be like he can make it, and I think he can. I just hope he continues to get better because I'd love to see a good, solid guy, hometown guy like that come up and be a contributing member of the Royals. I think it'd just be great.
Well, and if Jason makes it to the pros and Trevor Rosenthal continues kind of the arc he's on, maybe he helps us bring a guy like that here to Kansas City because he's been outstanding. Karjtik, who's Bill Ivey's wife, that still sounds weird too. She tweeted something about how outstanding his numbers were, and I'll pull them up at some point, but it's really good to see these Kansas City kids making it in the big leagues just as a whole Kansas City thing. But I think he had a great take on the fans and everything. I think they both did. And I think right now we're hurting as a fan base so bad that it's good to hear people speak positive about us both locally or both people that are local and not local. Mike, still no injury concerns.
Yeah. I think we're out of the woods there.
if you don't get that joke, go back and listen to about the first three or four interviews with Jason and my inability to ask him anything but that. I was still learning, guys.
I think he had a little bit of injury scare, but it wasn't anything serious. But Troy was very concerned, which is fine. Concerns, okay.
So on that note, we're going to get out of here.
This is
going to
be a short show, too.
We managed to get 15 minutes of extra on top of the interview, so that'll make about, after I put everything together, it'll be about 55 minutes. For Jeff Herr and Michael Engel and all the guys at Echo Sports, I'm Troy Olson. This has been the Kansas City Baseball Vault. Thank you to Jason Adam. Thank you to Ryan Verdugo. Until next week, have a great day, and go Royals.